On today's episode of The Good Word, Mo Dakil joins us to discuss LeBron James and Rich Paul. What are they cooking in L.A.? James Harden re-signs with the Clippers. What is going on with Malik Beasley and the Feds? Free agency news across the league and what the Knicks are doing with their coaching search. All that and much more coming up right now. Welcome to The Good Word. My name is Vincent Goodwill, senior NBA reporter from Yahoo Sports. A bit of business before we get into today's show. We are, of course, on YouTube, so don't forget to rate, review, subscribe to us. There's what's all the places you consume your audio podcast. It is the eve of free agency, or the eve morning of free agency. Had to bring my man Mo Dakil on. Mo, how you doing, man?
I'm doing great, man. The season's over. We got to sleep a little bit. We've all kind of got to relax a little bit, like, you know, and now it's just the comedy of free agency. And we get to look around going like, he got how much?
I did that already in a few smatterings of signings. Like, oh, he got that. Good for him. Oh, that's amazing.
It's my favorite kind of part of the conversation. It's just a favorite when you like you read the message going like, did I read that right? Is there like, oh, wait, no. Oh, my. Like, there's just it's just the best part of free agency.
No. And then on top of that, you get the notification that somebody's being investigated for gambling. We're going to get to that later because that's not even the juiciest part of this podcast to show you how much we got to rap about today. When LeBron James sneezes, we all have to grab Kleenex. So, LeBron sneezed. Mo, he opted into his $52.5 million deal for the first time, I think, leaving himself without a contract for the first time in well over 10 years, I feel like. He's always had the opt-outs and given himself the options and everything else. Straight opting in, $52.5 million. We are in a second apron tax world, and the Lakers have Luka Doncic to worry about. That's not the most interesting thing about this. After he opts in, Rich Paul's agent goes and says, hey, I know the Lakers are building for the future. We've had a great 8 years with Jeannie Buss and the Lakers organization. Was that like a soft launch of a trade request?
I mean, it was the most passive-aggressive way you can do it, which, listen, we've all followed LeBron throughout his course of his career. That is how he operates. Like, sorry, it is a very passive-aggressive way of doing things across the board. It wasn't a soft launch of a trade request, but it was more just like, we might be requested. It wasn't like that. It's more just kind of putting it out in the ether so that there's a little bit of that cloud hanging over every single decision, not just the Lakers make, but every decision other teams make, because it's like, well, this would be a good team that would trade for LeBron or whatnot. And I don't think the Lakers would trade for LeBron. Remind you also, he has a no trade clause. So LeBron would pick who he would be traded to, which is also another wrinkle of all of this stuff. So it's really interesting because I thought for the most part, he was going to opt out, was going to resign. You know, at the max, I didn't think he was going to give a discount. I don't think players should give a discount. We never ask owners to give a discount. And these dudes are the greediest of them all. So it's not like I don't think it's fair to expect that from players in that regard. And I think, you know, I thought that's what was going to happen. I thought he was going to set himself up for the next couple of years, be a good running mate with Luka. I think the pairing really can work between the two of them. The team has to be built differently, but I think that's where they need to go. And I think that's just a situation where I'm at. And now it just opens up so many possibilities.
Look, Mo, this thing is so fascinating on so many different levels, right? One, like you said, the LeBron no trade clause. A, in today's second tax apron world, it's really, really hard. I'm not going to bore you all with the details. Mo knows all the rules. I'm not going to bore you all with the details about how dollar for dollar has to match. And if you are in a second apron, you can't aggregate players. You can't put two for one. In other words, it makes it really, really difficult. to trade for a player like LeBron James, who's on the back end of clearly in the last 1 or 2 years of his career. One, I want to say, hell no, he should not take a pay cut, right? I don't think that players of his caliber should, it sets a bad precedent, right? And he's underpaid. Like, for the value, his value to the Lakers, his value to the NBA, he should probably be getting paid double. And I've seen over the past couple of years, and I've had criticisms, critiques of LeBron James and how he's handled things. But if we're going to be fair here, let's be fair. We never ask Stephen Curry to take a discount with the Golden State Warriors. We tell them, hey, pay that man what you owe him and figure it out, figure all that stuff out. Same thing to LeBron, a lot less sort of sweat equity. To let's be honest, on apples to apples, this is LeBron's 8th year in LA, which is his longest stint with any team at any point of his career. He is more of a Laker than he is of any other stint in his career, and that part is amazing. One run to the finals, one run to the conference finals. You can say it's been a little underwhelming for what the expectations were. Now, if this is not a soft launch of a trade request because you can't move LeBron anywhere, then what is LeBron saying? Is LeBron saying, prioritize me and my clock over Luka Doncic and his clock, as in Luka needs rim running bigs, I need spread defenders and shooters? Is there a way for the Lakers, with the limited resources that they have, Mo, to give Luka what he needs as far as the rim running bigs, and for LeBron to get the shooters that he, because remember, Dorian Finney-Smith, a key defender, opted out of $15.4 million in a contract, and that's higher, than the mid-level exception of 14.1 that a team over the cap could actually sign for.
I'll go even a step further, Vinny, because it's kind of being reported or words running around LA right now that they're expecting to lose him to Houston, which is something that might be an even more massive blow for the Lakers in that sense, because then they don't have a way to replace him. And then it becomes a situation where, hey, they could have brought him back and then went and find a center. Now it's, you know, one or the other in terms of, you know, what do? Do you go get a wing player or a wing player spread, shoot the floor, 3-and-D guy, which everybody's looking for, or the center? They're just in an extremely difficult position trying to figure out where they're going to go and how they're going to handle it. If I'm the Lakers, I am prioritizing Luka. He is my future. He is where I'm going. And I'm not trying to do that in a way that's also disrespectful to LeBron, because I also think that helps LeBron. A rim running center for Luka opens up opportunities and driving opportunities for LeBron off the second side, which is the way I think LeBron should attack and should go to work off of these things, and the way he should, the offense should kind of operate to a degree in that sense. And I think there's a lot more of those opportunities. Problem for the Lakers is there's just really no way to get better. The centers that are out there aren't great. And you don't know this about me, Ben, but like, if they sign DeAndre Ayton, I'm going to cry. If I have to watch DeAndre Ayton play in LA on a regular basis as a Laker or a Clipper, I'm going to cry. Like, there will literally be tears. I am not an Ayton fan. Long story, that could be a whole podcast of its own.
No. You can't open the door, Mo. Okay. You do not open the door. Give it to me, Mo.
He is just so frustrating because he has the talent to be really good, but
he
plays so soft every time. It's a very finesse game. And I'm not saying I don't like the jump hook and things like that, but there are times when you need to just go dunk the damn ball, and he doesn't. And there's a lot, and he would almost spin out of a dunk to show you his jump hook or a fadeaway or things like that. Like, there's just so many things. Like, it's things like that. I was critical of him through his Phoenix run. I laughed when Portland traded for him and was like, you know, and everybody thought this was going to be a big piece for Portland. I said, that's not who he is. And now he becomes a free agent last night in a very weird deal in terms of a buyout, which I still don't fully understand. And I want to know how much money he gave back, because that's perplexing, because he's not going to get it here unless he's going to go sign for a max with Brooklyn, which, if they're doing that, whole more crap to talk about there. But like, it's just, I don't get it. I don't think he's the answer for them. And I just think for them, like, there's just no great options at center, and they're not going to have the money to go get some of these wings. All right, if you lose Dorian Finney-Smith, it's not like you can turn around and get Nikhil Alexander-Walker.
Right.
He's getting big money elsewhere. Like, there's not a lot of options for them. They're kind of stuck in this situation where, like, this is the team. And I'll say this, the best thing for the Lakers would be LeBron demanding a trade.
Hold on. See, Mo likes to bury the lead. He goes and dips into the DeAndre Aytons and everything else. Like, no, it's cool. And then you land the plane with, well, you know, the best thing for the Lakers would be for LeBron to demand the trade. Now, are we saying this for the standpoint of the Lakers hitting the reset button to clear $52.5 million worth of salary so that you can go and get Luka Doncic all the things that he needs? Or do you actually tangibly believe that LeBron James is holding the Lakers back?
No, I don't think he's holding them back. I don't want to. Okay. It's the opportunity to reset. Listen, if LeBron wants to be there and wants to play, you know, all out, like, I think there's a great way this can work between Luka and LeBron for the both of them. I think both of them can benefit with having a secondary kind of playmaker and ball handler on some sets. Sometimes LeBron's going to be the main guy and sets the action up, and then it's an opportunity for Luka, and then it's the other way around. There's ways for this to work. I actually think this would be a great pairing. I just don't think LeBron really wants to do that, is my feeling, you know, in the way these things are constructed. And the other side of it too is, if that's those two, they need to beef up their defense behind them. Right. And that's not a shot. LeBron can be a good defender when he wants to be. He's 40 years old. He should pick and choose when he's going to actually have to defend. He's got to conserve his energy for a large part. Lucas, he needs to find a way to be just not such a negative defensively. And I think that's an important aspect for what they have. And then, you know, but with the situation where, like, if LeBron demands a trade, they can start to kind of reset and move on from this era. It's not that I think he's holding them back. I think there's a way for this to work. I just don't think that he wants to make it work the way it is, the way it would have to look for it to work. And I think that's an important thing and important distinction there. And then for the Lakers, kind of clears the books. Look, Austin Reeves declined the extension that they offered to him, which we all expected. He's going to be a free agent next year. I mean, I think there's going to be a lot of things that they got to start figuring out. What do we look like in the future, and how do we build, you know, for the life after LeBron and with Luka? And I think you got to start building that stuff now. And I think that's the important aspect of it. Like, I think we'll do the, oh no, LeBron demands a trade, this is so bad for the Lakers. I think quietly, this is a good thing for them.
If it happens, right? And not the ones really thinks it'll happen. Like, it's so many things. For one, Austin Reeves made a $100 million decision a couple of days ago, because he could have signed for, what, $489 or something like that.
Yeah.
And if someone chooses to max him out and give him the big boy max, because not all maxes are, like, I call some like medium maxes, like your rookie max or, you know, whatever it is. But if you sign a big boy max, that's a $200 million max deal. I'm not saying that he is or is not a $200 million player. I'm saying that's what he will be eligible to sign next offseason. Stick a pin in that. With your, to your DeAndre Ayton point, because you hit a lot, and I want to give you the runway on LeBron. So we're going to double back to DeAndre Ayton for a moment. When DeAndre Ayton came into the league, I saw the touch, the footwork, and I was like, oh, that's Patrick Ewing, right? I believed I saw Patrick Ewing, just not that meanness that a young Patrick Ewing had. And I thought, oh, maybe it'll come along. It hasn't really come along. He has the tools. He was like 14-11 last year for a Portland team that defensively was really, really good on the back end when they took him out. Right? One of those weird things. So I get your point, and someone's going to look at the 14-10 or the 18-12 and some of those other numbers that he's had throughout the course of his career and say, you know what? We can bring him there and we can get him at a decent number because he's taking a buyout. And like you said, we got to figure out what the numbers are for that buyout, and we can get him for the low, and he will be able to help us at least in the meantime, especially as Portland drafted a third center last week. You could see the writing was on the wall. To your point about LeBron, go ahead.
No. Go ahead. Because that's, I was just going to add on to that. Same things. Go ahead.
To your point about LeBron and Luka, I scan the league in my head, and I've done this before. Your best two players cannot be minuses, net minuses on defense. When you look at Houston, Kevin Durant is not a net positive anymore, but Amen Thompson might be the best defender in the league. Oklahoma City, we know what they have. Indiana, maybe, right? But they're not even as part of the championship conversation right now. If we're saying Cleveland's part of the championship conversation, you're saying Donovan Mitchell, not so much. Evan Mobley, yes, he is. The New York Knicks, Jalen Brunson, Karl Towns, no and no, which is why I never put them in a championship discussion, because your two best players cannot be minuses. Now, this is where it gets intriguing for the Luka and LeBron thing. Luka's agent is Bill Duffy, one of the more respected, longtime agents in the business, who's been doing this for a very, very long time. LeBron's agent is Rich Paul. You wonder how much of this is the flex. Who's trying to, you know, is Rich trying to carve out and make sure that I still have my space in this new Laker world order where Jeannie Buss is still the quote-unquote governor, but this ain't her money no more. This is somebody else's money. This is a new world order, and I wonder if the public salvo is trying to, you know, exert a level of influence here. And that's why I ask, can you serve both masters, lack of a better phrase, serve both objectives at the same time and get the Lakers to where they want to be? Because, Mo, they were third in the West last year in the regular season. And we tend to forget that because they got their ass kicked in round one.
Yeah, and, you know, look, there was a whole level of they made a massive trade, right? And that's a whole change that comes with it. And having a full offseason with Luka, you know, he already looks like he's lost a lot of weight and has looked better and slimmer. Hopefully he'll come into camp in shape and blah, blah, blah. We've done that whole story with Luka several times.
Yes, yeah. Best shape of my life.
That's my favorite part in the offseason is when everybody comes into training camp is the best shape of the – by the way, I never come in with best shape of my life. Those days are gone. That was in like the NBA lockout was the best when I got in the best shape of my life. I had nothing better to do, and all I did was work out and box. That was it. And now I got no time for that, but nobody cares about me. The whole concept though is what you, this funny thing that you bring up where it's kind of like a bit of a, you know, who has more power between Bill Duffy and Rich Paul. I don't think that's going to play with the new owners. You know, with Mark Walters and whatnot. I don't think they care, you know, about that side of the stuff. And I think that's going to be a thing that both sides have to understand. Like, they're going to do what's best for the team right now. And that's going to be their large focus. And Jeannie Buss, like you said, is the governor, but it's not the name that's going to be on the checks anymore. It's not Buss on the checks anymore when this whole thing clears. So I think that's an important distinction there to understand that. And again, new ownership, you have your face of the franchise set up for the next, we always say 10 years, I always feel like it's too long. I'm going to say the next 5 to 6 years. You never know how the way this league is, it could be 3 years.
You can't plan for 2 years. You can only plan for 2 years, in my opinion, in the NBA. You cannot plan for anything longer than that.
Yeah, it's really kind of chaotic, but you have that young piece now that you're going to want to kind of focus on. So like, it's totally understandable. And I don't think it's disrespectful to LeBron in any way, shape, or form. And they're paying that man $52 million. Not a lot of disrespect there. It's. I think the whole situation, though, again, it's how do you build this team? It's really complicated. And it is something. I think Luka has to learn to work a little bit more off ball. And I think there's nothing better for him to do that with having a guy like LeBron pass to him. And I think there's ways for these things to kind of develop and focus. I thought JJ did a good job in the regular season. It's got to figure out how to handle playoff prep a little bit better, but thought he did a good job, young up and coming coach as well. Like, you have a lot of winds and changes kind of coming here. And I think there's a lot of stuff that we're going to see from this Laker organization. Like, within 3 years, I think it's going to be totally different. And it's not just LeBron would retire if he even stayed that long. I just think the whole sort of way the organization operates is going to be different. So even the, excuse my phrase here, but the measuring contest between two agents isn't really going to bother, I think, them. They're just going to be like, yo, we need to win games.
Well, here's the other thing. The last thing for the Lakers is the Lakers family-run organization, and the Jerry West stuff notwithstanding, because I did not like how they handled things with Jerry West and his family in the last couple of years there. The Jerry West stuff notwithstanding, they are very much, we take care of our own. They are very much a family organization. We don't know how sentimental this new guy is. Now, maybe because Magic Johnson's walking in the building. Now, that's intriguing. Magic Johnson's walking back in the building, baby. We gonna have some changes, Mo. We gonna have some changes. Magic says, I'm not gonna be here. But 5 years later, I will. 5 years later, I'll be back here. Don't you worry. Now, Mo, to a franchise that you have had a lot of experience with, the LA Clippers, they made a quiet, subtle move yesterday. James Harden opt out of his deal, signed a two-year, once again, year in the option for $81 million. Well, 41 and a half, I think, averaged out to be. What did you think of that, given what we saw with James in the regular season and what we saw in the first round against Denver Nuggets?
Not what we saw in the first round, what we saw in game seven, which is what we're used to seeing with James Harden, the whole disappearing act when a team needs him most, he's just nowhere to be found. It's what we're used to. And I'm sorry, that's just the reputation. That's what history shows. No, anybody wants to get mad at me, talk to your guy, James. I think that's more the fact of the matter. I think what this shows more than anything else is the Clippers are setting themselves up to be players in 2027 free agency. I think yep. that's ultimately their plan. It's not.
Yep.
You look at Kawhi's contract, it ends there. You look at the only person I think they have under contract up to past that point is Zubac. After that, everybody else is kind of open unless I'm missing something somewhere. But they're going to have a ton of cap space. They were not going to give that up. That's the same reason why they didn't re-sign Paul George last year, because they didn't want it. He wanted a little more years. They weren't willing to give it to him. They were being stuck on this. They went around and said, you know, they put it out like we're afraid of the second apron press release or whatever last year, and that was complete BS. It was, you know, when you understand that if the deal they gave him would have still put them in the second apron. It was, but whatever. I think that's their focus right there, is the 2027 year. We want to be competitive. We want to keep, you know, the Intuit Dome, you know, we want to try to keep the Intuit Dome packed. You know, they're doing a pretty good job. The wall is pretty dope. If it's
I like the wall. I like the wall.
The wall's pretty cool. And credit to those fans at the wall. They really do pour their heart into it and they go nuts. The rest of the stadium needs some more people. But I think there's a little bit more.
I like the building as a whole. I like the building.
I'll tell you what, I don't.
Really?
I think I'm one of the few. My problem with it, again, you guys got to understand, and this is for your listeners, because you've seen me. I'm kind of a fat boy. I like to eat, right? And like, to me, it's like I've gone as a fan a couple of times as well as media. Media, my problems with the media is just there's too many levels. I got to like figure all this.
It's confusing as hell. It's confusing as hell.
It's amazing in that sense. As a fan, first off, I hate the app, but whatever. The building, I don't feel like it has LA vibes to it. Like the one thing I do appreciate about the Staples Center, and it'll always be Staples Center, is like they have like LA places here, there, you know, to a degree, right?
This
is all generic, and I understand the whole idea is just get everybody back into their seats, you know, as quickly as possible. But like, we're LA. Like, how do you not have like great tacos? You know, like one of the taco trucks that give them a stand inside there or whatnot, or even just have the taco trucks line up outside in the patio area that they have, like just have something more LA generic. That's my complaint about it, is it doesn't feel like it reps LA the way it should. If you're going to be in Inglewood. Yeah. Like if you're going to be in Inglewood, rep LA. Like that's my thing. Have a Randy's donut stand, like whatever, like rep LA. Is my thing, and maybe I want a donut.
I respect that.
That's my complaint.
But no, it's funny because I looked up the 27-28 cap, and Ivica Zubac, who's going to be making $20 million that year, which will be a bargain. It's probably a bargain right now if you're going to make $20 million, right? But that's all they have. Kawhi's contract will run off the books. Even if Harden picks up his deal after next season, that will be sort of the same thing. You want to put yourself in a place that, hey, we are an attractive free agent option. The Clippers have never really been that, notwithstanding with the, you know, with the setup that they've had with Kawhi and Paul George. But all it takes is one cycle. Like, the Lakers weren't really a free agent option until Shaquille O'Neal went there. And all of a sudden, we got the big fish, and now we're the free agent option because free agency was relatively new by 1996, which for me, Mo, does not seem that long ago. And then in my head, it's 30 years ago. Damn, I'm old, right? That's what it is.
We're both old. No, it's not even, we're both
old. I'm sorry, y'all. Y'all don't like to go to crates. I was thinking, 1996 is like 20 years ago. Biggest free agency of all time. No, it's 30 years ago. My bad, y'all. For my younger listeners, if you weren't born in 1996, just go do your research. But when we come back, we got to talk about some gambling. Back on the Good Word here, Mo Dakil. Mo, I was enjoying a nice Sunday run at the gym, and then my phone blew up, and it said Malik Beasley, and I'm like, oh yeah, expecting this, expecting the numbers, heard everything else, and then, you know, my people have went quiet for the past couple days about Malik Beasley. I'm like, it just means, when you're a reporter and people go quiet on you, that could mean, yeah, you've got something, or yeah, you've got something, and there's something that we don't want you to know because we have no idea when it's going to happen because it's the feds. And the feds came down investigating Malik Beasley for prop bets, gambling. Doesn't say, we don't know if it's him or people related to him dating back to the 23-24 season in Milwaukee. And what happens when that happens, Mo? The Twitter detectives are out in full force. They're looking at every bit of game film. They acting like they you. They acting like they doing the film study, right? Malik Beasley, oh man, this is the play where he got blown by. He has something here. It's just icky. It doesn't feel good. And for Malik Beasley, who's on the verge of signing a mid-level sort of exception deal, like 3-42, 3-45, depending on who you talk to, could not have come at the worst possible time in the worst possible scenario.
I mean, this was one of those moments where I could just see the Pistons sliding the contract over, getting the alert, and then sliding it back. You know, like if you could just see, if this was a movie, it'd be like right when he's picking up the pen and about to sign the contract, and like, nope,
no, we've can't changed our mind. Can't do it.
I think this is one, the Twitter thing that's been going on where everybody's posting clips. Like when they're talking, oh, he got blown by. I'm like, that's Malik Beasley forever. Like, I don't feel like he was like this. I go like, that's a normal Malik Beasley play. Like, that's right. Not the things there and stuff like that. Like, I don't know what to believe. Like, these things are really, this is where it gets really complicated. Mm-hmm. Where, you know, like, it's the prop bets. It's not throwing a game. It's okay. I'm not, you know, it's these guys kind of understanding, you know, trying to figure out like how to kind of game the gambling system and earn some extra money. We obviously saw Porter and, you know, mm-hmm. in Toronto go through the whole thing. We know there's another, you know, investigation going on with Terry Rozier. And you have a lot of stuff with all this. I guess my view of it, Vinny, like, first off, this is the type of stuff that's going to happen. You're going to allow gambling? This is going to happen. There's going to be bad actors in all of this stuff, period. Like, in every sport across the board, there's going to be stuff where we're going to see stuff and we're going to be like, you know, this is questionable. And this is why the NBA gets so mad when somebody, you know, player turns to the ref and gives them the money sign.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Meaning, you know, like, you're obviously, like, that's why they come down incredibly hard, like the integrity of the game and all those things. The one thing I'll say, and this is probably going to be like, you know, Mo's soft, and I kind of am. The system worked the way it was supposed to. You know, he got caught. The checks and balances said, this is irregular betting. Something's wrong. And it went up the chain. Now, would I like to have been quicker? Yes, maybe this is something over time. They find a way to kind of handle this differently and quicker. But the system they're building in place is working. Not in defensive gambling. I actually kind of wish none of this was involved in all this stuff. Like, the fact I have to learn the difference between -240 and +150 and figure out all that stuff is not fun for me. I don't know how much you have to deal with it, but it sucks. You know, it's Sorry, I'm not a gambler. This was, if trust me, I'd be broker if I was. it would be, I think the whole thing though is the system is kind of working and weeding people out. Now, I still think, Vinny, one day we're going to have a whole scandal much bigger than this rip open. When I don't know what sport, I don't know what level or whatnot, but we're going to look and be like, damn, like we've opened Pandora's box.
Right.
And this is the type of stuff that comes out of that box. This is the situation that you're in. Get in bed with these guys. This is what happens. Now you have to prepare for the consequences. You can put as much fail safes as you want in there, but these stories are going to come out and they're always going to be a black mark every time they do.
And the crazy thing for me is part of this, I'm going to say natural order, because that's not the right word I want to use, but you'll get when I say this, all this new money that's into the league. Half the league has changed ownership over the past 15 years under the promise that this is an undervalued league to a large degree. The money's going to get greater and greater and greater when you get the TV deals, the media rights deals, and the gambling people involved. That's why you've seen the valuations go through the roof over the past 10 years since the 2011 CBA, which is where you got in the best shape of your life. And I got the least amount of sleep in my life, sleeping on that damn couch, trying to figure out, man, is the 50-50 going to happen? Don't take me back to that time. That was miserable. I'll just say
the big difference was you were also getting paid at that point, and I was unemployed. So I would have. That's true. I thought I was ready to go to business school if this season got ended. I was ready to start studying for an MBA.
I was getting paid so little at the time that it felt like I was unemployed, right? All right.
But fair enough.
But since the 2011 CBA, so many teams have changed this. I want to say 16, especially with the Lakers now, 16. So you have to find all these new revenue streams. And then gambling comes along and says, hey, we've been here this whole time. We are just waiting for you to come and embrace us. And they're like, okay, cool, fine. You put the fail safes in the system. Here's what happens. The league doesn't catch this stuff. FanDuel catches this stuff because they can't afford to lose money. They can't afford to have their system compromised by insider trading, by and large. So if that were to happen, and neither one of us is indicting Malik Beasley here, let's be perfectly clear. It's under investigation. Like they did the Jontay Porter thing really quickly. And granted, when you're a 15th man or a two-way player or whatever it is, it's a lot easier to get him out than to have to worry about somebody who was in high and running for sixth man of the year and is in line for a $14 million a year contract for a team that is now of consequence. The bad part about this is, like you said, people go to the tape. And I don't know if you remember the very last play that Malik Beasley participated in. Do you remember the very last play he participated in, Mo?
I don't. Off the top of my head, but it was that game. It was game six. It was that whole
Knicks.
Oh man, nah. Yeah.
So I'm about to get you. Okay. So Jalen Brunson, the three ball, he crosses up Asar Thompson, three ball at the top of the key. The Pistons run a beautifully executed, designed play that gets Malik Beasley on the right wing. Cade gets it to him. He drops the ball, and all of a sudden, everybody's like, "Oh, now he's on the take." Here's the thing, y'all. He made six threes in the game. When they were down 15 in the second quarter, he hit six threes in the second quarter alone, including the three at the buzzer to give him a lead. That's why none of this stuff makes sense when you're trying to say, well, of course, the Knicks were -1.5. He had to. If he was going to throw the game, he'd have did in the first half and not made a damn shot. That's why you have to be very, very careful when you're talking about things that you think that you see, because you look at the end and you work your way back to the beginning, and it's never that easy.
No, and it's so hard. It would be so hard to just try to rig a game in that sense. And if you're Malik Beasley and that stuff. And by the way, just not for nothing, the playoff bonus gets bigger when you go to the next round. So I don't feel like, you know, whatever he's making in game, like he's looking to make more if the team wins and get to game seven and potentially move on to the next round. Like there are things in there. So it's like, I just think it's so easy. Like you said, let's just look at the tape and look at every turnover and just assume what's good. You know, okay, that one's a fair turnover, but that one, Nope, he was point.
That's sketchy. This isn't
blue chips. This isn't blue chips. We're not Nick Nolte. We're not looking at Tony's video. And again, you younger folks, go watch the movie. You're not, and then sitting there rewinding and then go charging at Tony for shaving points. Like, that's not something that's, I think, very easy for us to prove in that sense. And again, it's in a moment where it's like, it doesn't make sense to me in what we're talking about. You know, it's Tom Haberstroh wrote a piece on his Substack that kind of broke down one of the games. And it's the funniest thing to me. One of the irregular bettings was a game against Portland where, you know, the under for Beasley's rebounds went from minus, I think, like 120 or something at 2.5 rebounds to like plus 240. And it was irregular betting or something along the lines. So the idea was you bet the under. He had 6 rebounds in that game. Tom went through the film and kind of looked at it like it didn't even cash. So even if he was involved in it, he's bad at it. Like what? I don't necessarily, and again, I don't know the full story. This whole thing
we're
literally still at the very beginning of this. And the FBI ain't calling me and giving me the tips in terms of the details of the investigation. They're not letting me know what's going on. It's not, we're not in that way. We're just getting it as it's being fed to us. But like, I don't know where this is true, when isn't true, and things like that. But all I know is the more we do this, the more we dive into gambling, like you talked about, and the revenue stream and everything that comes with that, the more we're going to have to deal with these stories. It's going to be there. It's going to be in the back of people's minds when somebody misses a free throw or a shot they normally make or whatnot, and things like that. It's not that different than when we had fantasy sports and people would get pissed off at the guy for kneeling instead of going in for a touchdown or whatnot.
Yeah, yeah.
I've definitely lost a fantasy football championship off of something like that. You know, I'm still mad at Ted Ginn Jr. for dropping a wide open touchdown pass that would have had me win some money. Like we definitely got some of that. But like it's a level of like we have to get used to this. And the one thing I'll say, because this definitely story came out this season, the players hate it because they're just constantly getting heckled with like,
the fans are ruthless. They're ruthless. They're
absolutely ridiculous with all of this stuff, right? Like they're in the way of like, you didn't get that rebound and that cost me whatever. And I'm like, well, maybe y'all shouldn't be betting on this. And I think that's kind of the more social societal kind of conversation that has to be had down the road. But like, the players don't like this. This sucks for them. And I think this also sucks. These stories even hurt them more. The guys that aren't involved in any way, and it's like 99% of them, as it seems so far. Right. You know, it's like every time they miss this shot, Gary Trent Jr. lost the ball out of bounds on the last play right there. We're going to start pulling up the film now and talk about so there's just – every time we're going to do this and we're going to put this on the players like that, like that's the thing where I look at this and just go like, damn, man. And every time these stories come out, I just shake my head. I get frustrated. And it's just like, all right, like now we have to deal with this. And it's like, I don't know really how to respond to it sometimes.
You can't, because, and unfortunately for those of us who've been part of this NBA ecosystem for the better part of 2 decades, if not longer, the NBA has to fight the hardest to keep, reestablish, redefine its integrity. Because for whatever reason, the league is rigged. No matter what happens, no matter who wins the title, he's like, oh, the league, of course they rigged it for Oklahoma City to get there. Are you out of your mind? What happens, someone says the league is rigged for this to happen. The league is rigged for the Indiana, for the Sundown Town NBA Finals. That's what you telling me? Okay, enough of that. Because we're going to talk about actual basketball.
More where I'm equipped.
Actual basketball. So there were some signings, some pre-free agency signings. Signings began officially, where you can wink, wink, talk to new teams at 6 p.m. today as opposed to midnight July 1st. Now, Julius Randle, 3 years, $100 million to re-sign with the Minnesota Timberwolves. The important part of that was they re-signed Naz Reid to 5-125 before that. So when everybody said, oh, Naz Reid's going to be there, you're going to give him $25 million a year, that's going to be your starting power forward. And then boom, no, we're signing Julius Randle to $300 million player option in the third year. I am not as down on Julius Randle as everybody else was, because I saw through two playoff rounds, he stuck his shoulder in the chest of LeBron James in round one and then Draymond Green in round two and kicked their ass. There's a lot of things you can have complaints about with Julius Randle. I totally get that. But where do you sit on those two free agencies, or those two sort of continuity signings for the Timberwolves 2 years straight in the Western Conference Finals? What do you see with those?
Yeah, like I actually think they're good signings. Like, mm-hmm. here's the thing. Mm-hmm. I thought when Naz Reid was going to be a free agent on the open market, I thought he'd get 30 plus. Yep. Right. And again, listen, we all know Brooklyn's the only team with money, but we know how the NBA works, where if a team really wants a guy, there's a trade or something, cap space gets cleared, and all of a sudden they're able to sign a guy. Unless you're the Lakers, you can't do that anymore. The whole issue with those things. But like, I think, you know, getting him 5 years is a lot of years. Like, let's just be clear about that. But again, with the cap going up and the numbers where he's going to be at financially, I don't think it's a bad deal for them. I understand all the warts playoff wise and things like that, and everything that goes with it. Julius Randle deal, I love. 3 years, $100 million. Like, Vin, we were talking about this dude at one point getting like a massive contract extension. This is 3 years for $100 million. This is something that still also easily can be moved. Yep. And somewhat tradable in that sense. Yep. Not to saying that they would do that. I think that's kind of just a smart move with what they have. And I think this is the most important thing, is they couldn't replace those guys, mm-hmm. right? If Naz walked away, there was no avenue to replace them. If Randle walked away, no avenue to replace them. Now, they're going to lose Nikhil Alexander-Walker in this run, mm-hmm. and that does suck. Mm-hmm. He was good for them in the playoffs. He's the type of player everybody's looking for. That's why he's probably going to get overpaid in free agency. You know, I think there's going to be a bit of a run for him, and we'll see if he can kind of replicate what he did
he's
in Minnesota.
To me, he's a mid-level player. He's like a 14. I think the market will be somewhere on $14, $15 million. Even if it is a bad signing, it's not going to kill you. It's not going to cripple your cap sheet.
$14 million would be great. I've seen stuff where I've seen Atlanta's might make a run at him and might try to make a sign and trade and give him $25 million or try to put him in that. Again, this is all. Yeah, like, we'll see what happens. Yeah, we'll see how this kind of stuff works itself out. And maybe we come back later. Like, oh, that's actually a good deal. If he's a mid-level, that's a great deal. I don't think Minnesota had. I think they knew they weren't going to be able to re-sign him. So they said, let's go get these other guys. And then on their roster, they have young guys that they need to kind of develop. Right? Mm-hmm. Doesn't mean it's going to work out. Does it mean they're going to replace him? Not necessarily. But, you know, Shannon Jordan Jr. had a nice little run there. You know, it even got
some. They
got
to figure out what they got
in
Rob Dillingham as Mike Conley Jr. starts to age out.
Right. And for me, their biggest issue is the second ball handler. It can't just all be on Ant. And I know Julius can play the playmaker role, but I mean just as a guard. They need somebody that can keep the ball moving and get them into offense a little bit more easier and things like that. And God bless Mike Conley, but, you know, he old. He's like us. Like, it's, you know, in terms of the NBA level, he's old. So it's that level of stuff. So I like the deals. I thought they got good value in both of those deals. I know there's some people that are really upset about the Naz Reid one, but for me, ultimately, I think it was good value, and we'll see how this kind of plays out with what they do. But their hope is that these guys on the bench will be able, one of them will be able to step into the role that Nikhil Alexander-Walker played for them.
Yeah, because it's funny, the Detroit Pistons now, who were ready to give Malik Beasley that 3-42, they may have to reallocate that to Nikhil Alexander-Walker or to Caris LeVert. And the thing is, guys, and maybe we can clip this or whatever, but they haven't closed the door on bringing back Malik Beasley pending the investigation. Now, this puts you in a trick bag in a way, because while no one is on the market who can bring you what Malik Beasley can bring you, are you trying to keep your powder dry for that long and leave that big of a hole on your roster? You may have to let Dennis Schroeder walk. Dennis Schroeder might be going to the Sacramento Kings or the Dallas Mavericks, you know, for that mid-level $14 million. But if you are holding that because you're looking at his value to your team and saying, hey, let's see how this plays out, you're missing on the first wave of free agency and maybe the second wave of free agency. And then you also have to factor in Terry Rozier had been investigated, but he's still playing. So I don't know how we square all of those things. I just want to put a bow in the stuff with Malik Beasley and Nickeil Alexander-Walker since you brought him up, because Nickeil could wind up being in Detroit. Bobby Portis, though, a name I was for sure thought was going into free agency this summer, because I didn't think the Bucks were going to keep him for the money. 3-44. I like Bobby Portis, and I don't think that's a bad deal. And I think, especially with Giannis still being on the roster, that's a move you had to make.
Yeah, that's a move of like, we need to keep Giannis happy more than anything else. You know, like, let's just be, you know, kind of upfront about it. We know Giannis likes having him on the team. We know we're losing Brook Lopez. It really does not seem like he's coming back. Again, we can't lose all our bigs in that instance. My concern for the Bucks, and this is a good deal, I'm good with it with Portis. I just don't know where they go from here in that situation. Right. Like, I just think they don't really have an avenue in terms of getting that much better. They don't have an avenue of getting younger. You know, their pick next year was supposed to go to New Orleans if it was worse than New Orleans, but now it's going to end up in Atlanta. Don't get me started there.
Go ahead. Finish that.
Let me do the Milwaukee, and then we can go back to that. But it's almost like it's almost similar to my LeBron opinion. They're almost as a team better off trading Giannis because they have no way to really improve
get better
this roster.
Brought it with him,
you know, and so it's like, and I think the truth of the matter is, like, I understand everybody's going to be like, well, the East is weak, and this is, you know, and they can string this together. They're not stringing something together with, you know, Kevin Porter Jr. as their starting guard with Giannis as his teammate while Dame's rehabbing from an Achilles. And, you know, when he comes back the year after next season, we know how it goes for old guards. I was with the Clippers when Chauncey tore his Achilles and then came back.
Oh, yeah.
I remember what it looked like, and I love Chauncey, and I knew what he was. I honestly still think to this day, Vin, if he doesn't tear his Achilles, we're at least in the conference finals that year. Like, that's just my view of it. But, like, you can't, like, with Dame, you can't just kind of project, like, okay, he'll be fine after that. This is a long-ass injury recovery, especially when you're an older guard. I just don't see a way for them to get better. And it's like, I don't know if they should wait for a Giannis trade demand. They should almost do the quiet little Giannis, just slide me a piece of paper, three teams you like. We'll see what we can do. Can't promise it, but like we have to, like, we've just run our course. But now that they've signed Bobby, we know that that's not going to be the case. Like, unless Giannis turns around and demands one, they're not going to be proactive about it. And I get it. You don't want to be the next Nico Harrison. Like, you don't want the city to turn on you and things like that. But I just don't. It's easy for me to say in LA. I don't have to worry about Milwaukee. It's like there's just no avenue where I look at this team going like, yeah, a move here or there. They got this. They can still make that happen, and they can probably bring in a piece. But I just don't see, and they're so far away from contention.
Even with everything, you know what this sets up for? And you're going to laugh at this because of your Clipper ties. This sets up for the sneaky Doc Rivers, we're going to overachieve because nobody expects anything from us year. He has it. You know I'm not lying. He has these years every now and again where you're like, we don't expect anything from him. Like, year with the Clippers where he's like, man, how you get 48 wins? All he got is a rookie named Shai Gilgeous-Alexander over there. What is he doing? Don't be surprised if we get the Doc Rivers Memorial overachieving year. Don't be surprised.
Will they get knocked out after taking a 3-1 lead? I'm so mean. You set that up. I'm so mean. Oh, I feel bad about myself. Oh,
no, you don't.
I'm such a mean
you don't
person.
Feel bad. You don't feel bad.
A little bit. But it was funny. I had to do it. It was funny. It was right there.
It was right there. I respect it. Now, before we go to break, you talked about the New Orleans Pelicans, the Derrick Queen. We're going to trade up from 23 to 13 to go get our guy, to get Black Jokic. That's what some people have said, you know, plays under the rim, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, whatever, right? I'm giving you the floor for what the Pelicans did on draft night.
It was just franchise suicide at the end of the day. And this isn't a shot about the Queen. Queen could be a great player. Look, I'm not a college basketball fan. I'm not into that stuff. So I don't know. Like, I find out about these guys at Summer League and then when we go into the season. But, like, I just, my understanding, this is a dude that can't play with Zion because he plays too much like Zion, meaning he can't shoot and doesn't play defense. That's just my understanding of that.
Mm-hmm.
To have given up an unprotected pick next season when you're in the Western Conference and you are not near even a play-in status, to give up a unprotected pick that's either yours or Milwaukee, whoever's worse between the two of you. And one thing, knock on wood, Milwaukee's a Giannis injury away from being a G League team. Like, we're looking at all that, even with all the Doc underachieving magic that might be there. This is a pick that could potentially be a top five pick next year. And to not put any protections on it, to not cover yourself in any way in case the season doesn't go well. So, like, when you make that trade and that stuff, oh, we made this pick. Okay, cool. Are you trading Zion? Well, like, if you trade Zion, you're going to be bad next year, but you don't have your pick. Like, I don't know where you're, like, so it's not fruitful for you to be bad next year because you're betting on yourself, saying our pick's going to be better than Milwaukee's, and, like, we'll be fine. It'll be a late, you know, first round pick or mid first round pick. It's just, and none of it makes sense when you look at across the board. And then it's even when you go a step further, you had a chance to get off McCollum earlier. Instead, you trade McCollum for Jordan Poole to have his money longer. And, like, I just, again, it's not a winning situation where I just feel like Poole's going to come in and fix everything. I like the Fears kid that they drafted, but he's not going to get a ton of minutes, you know? Like, yeah, but you're not going to get it. You're going to get some minutes, but he's going to be mostly the backup playing behind Poole, who, like, let's just be honest, like, how great of a veteran leader is Jordan Poole going to be in this group with everything you have? Like, do you feel confident in a team that's headlined by, you know, it's Poole, let's just assume good health, Poole, Herb Jones, Trey Murphy the third. I love both of those two guys.
Right.
Zion and Eves Missy as your starting five. Like, You really think that's going to compete in the Western Conference? That's going to be tough. I know there's teams that are going to drop off, but there are teams coming up. Yep. San Antonio is going to come up. I think they're going to be better. I think Portland's on the way up. Like, I think they're going to be better. Like, I don't see New Orleans jumping those teams unless Zion plays 82 games and is the Zion we thought was being drafted.
Right. That ain't happening. That last part of Zion playing 82 games or whatever, that part ain't happening. When we come back, though, I'm going to ask Mo about the New York Knicks. It's time for the last word with my man Mo Dakil. Mo, the New York Knicks haven't made news recently, right? They fired a coach a month ago, fought a plan. And they're like, how could you fire a coach without a plan? You fired a coach because you wanted to fire the coach. Didn't matter who you wanted to take his place. But I've been telling people for the past 2 weeks that Mike Brown is going to wind up being the guy. He impressed during his interview, as did James Borrego, as did Michael Norrie. Like, those are sort of the top-level candidates. I do not believe it's going to be Michael Malone for a very obvious reasons that we won't discuss here. But what do you think of Mike Brown if Mike Brown winds up being the guy?
Look, Mike Brown's been a good coach. I think you look at the turnaround in Sacramento, and it starts with him kind of getting those guys together. They defended well, but he had a nice little offensive system kind of going, and that's what you're hoping for in New York with all that stuff. I'm going to be a here now. This is where I'm going to be a bit mean, right? Like, they ain't going to make a difference. Like, I didn't think they should have fired Thibodeau. I thought, you know, you get to the conference finals, you get to game six in the conference finals. I have a lot of problems with Tibbs as a coach, and particularly not having an offense. So I understand why you'd want to go and you get Mike Brown and try to get an offensive system implemented and put together with everything you have. But at the end of the day, like, I just don't see that, like, him fixing the problems that were hurting the Knicks. As bad as the offense was, that wasn't the issue. Right. Like, even not using your bench, which Tibbs didn't, and Mike Brown will use his bench more. Do we really need more campaign? Like, this is really like the guy, like, you know, I get it. Delon Wright, you know, Landry Shamet, they should have gotten more minutes. He didn't play them till towards the end of that series against Indiana. Right. I'm going to be honest with y'all. They weren't going to the finals because Delon Wright and Landry Shamet didn't play enough. They weren't going to the finals because, and Vin, you said this in the beginning, Jalen Brunson and Karl Anthony Towns net negatives defensively. That makes it extremely difficult. And it wasn't even like, hey, we're trying defensively. No, they just couldn't do it. Whatever it is, there was a level that we've seen a lot of bad defenders in the league. We just need you to hold up long enough for us to kind of get behind you. And those guys weren't able to do it. That's really what the issues are. Now, I'm more than happy to eat crow. If Mike Brown turns around, gets those guys to defend a bit better, and then they have an offensive system that uses Mikal Bridges a little more often, uses OG Anunoby a little bit more often, takes some pressure off of Brunson and Cat carrying the offensive load, I'm all for it. I just don't know if that's what's going to happen.
It's hard to say. Like, my thing, part of it is, do these guys need a coach with gravitas, right? Do you need a coach that has a super strong outward presence? And if it does, because Leon Rose doesn't talk, he's like Groundhog Day, except we never see his shadow. Like, Leon Rose never comes out in public. James Dolan doesn't like the public. The coach is going to have to be the person taking all the bullets for the entire organization. Is Mike Brown or anybody else built for that, in addition to being able to coach a basketball team with players who seem to be very headstrong and need maybe a little bit of a arrangement adjustment, because Karl Towns and Jalen Brunson didn't have the best on-floor chemistry. And if you're going to work, not only is that defense going to have to show up, offensively is going to have to show up between those two players working in tandem. Is Mike Brown that guy? I don't know if there is a coach walking the earth that can take that roster, even with the Eastern Conference being as open as it is. I don't think any of us are picking the New York Knicks to go to the finals next year unless you're a Knicks fan. And there's a lot of Knicks fans in media, but I'm just saying, some of us sober-eyed people, I don't know if any of us are doing that. Mo, before we let you go, is there anything else intriguing, any other free agent situation, anything before we go into Summer League that has caught your eye? Because I just want you to get your shots off, because I feel like you've gotten your shots off today.
Listen, you put a mic in front of me and a camera, I'll probably get a few shots off. I just can't help myself. And some of them will be mean, just how I am. You know, the two teams that I've really thought have done extremely well. One we kind of touched on. I think the Atlanta Hawks did really well.
Yes.
In what they've done. You know,
yes.
Take a flyer out on Porzingis. Whatever you feel about Kristaps Porzingis, if he's healthy, he's still a beast in that sense. It's a contract year. Last time he was in a contract year, he really kind of killed it in Washington. And Trae Young has never had a center that can pop like this. And that adds a different element to you offensively in the way you go about it. I like them being kind of aggressive. Now they have this pick coming from New Orleans, you know, and I think that's a huge win for them just on that side. I think Jalen Johnson coming back is I'm excited to see him kind of get back into the flow of things. So everybody forgets this was a fun Hawks team before he got hurt and everything kind of depressed.
Yep.
You know, we've seen Dyson Daniels, all the stuff that they have. You know, I'm excited for what they have. And again, if they even go and get Nickeil Alexander-Walker, even if they overpay for him a little bit and he performs at the same level, that's a really interesting team there. I lied. There's three teams, just real quick.
Okay, go ahead.
The other one, too, I love the Orlando Magic, what they did in getting Bane. Like, you know, I think he's a perfect fit for them. Everybody's still screaming they need a point guard. They really don't. They got enough. I think they can cobble enough playmaking across the board between Paolo Banchero, Franz Wagner, and Bane. Two key things for them. Jalen Suggs, we got to make sure he's healthy, and I think that's going to be pretty big one to keep an eye on. And Franz has to figure out where his shot went. I don't know where it went, but he needs to look under every rock. Yeah, he needs to find out where it is and bring that thing back, because that's just incredibly important. But I'm excited for them to at least have a little bit more of an offensive punch. And I'm looking at Jamal Mosley. Like, listen, I think he's a great coach. I think he's done unbelievable defensively. We need an offensive system put in place there.
Especially for those guys. Especially a non-conventional offensive team that they have.
Yeah, and you need to be creative. You need to kind of just get to work here. You have all offseason to kind of figure some stuff out. And the last one, and this was the obvious one, Houston's just what they did this offseason, getting KD. Like, I didn't, my Vignola, I didn't give a damn about the Durant trade until it happened. I was like, there's the only one place he can go where I can say, like, okay, there's a legitimate chance for them to be really good. And that was Houston. That's where he ended up. And the fact they didn't have to give up really much. Mm-hmm. And they have all this stuff behind them. They just gave Jabari Smith an extension that was lower than the extension. Yeah, I like him a lot. I want them to unleash him. I don't know if they will now that they have KD. I still think there's more he can do offensively, and they just kind of just put him in a little bit of a box. But with KD there, I think he kind of stays in the box, unfortunately.
Right.
But the extension is lower than what they gave Jalen Green last year. I think it's around like $24 million a year over the next few years. And they have so much left over that, like, hey, we need to go get a make a trade. We got that. It is rumored again. Sounds like they're going to sign Dorian Finney-Smith away from the Lakers. Add more defense. Add more length. Another 3-and-D guy. He was really good for the Lakers. I think he's going to be good for Houston in that area again. Adding more defense. Ime is a great coach. I just love what those three teams like. When I look at it, going like that's the fun stuff. And I love teams taking a swing. Just saying, like, screw it. Let's go for it.
Go for it.
Now's the time.
Go for it. I'm all for going for it. I hate these scared ass teams. Hey, we're gonna do it slowly. No. Sometimes you only have your window. And when you have KD, your window is your window, and you can still go for it while not sacrificing Amen Thompson and Alperen Sengun and Jabari. Like, they still have enough young pieces there. But man, my man Mo Dakhil, I will see you in Las Vegas, man. We're going to have dinner at one of those fancy, smancy spots that you pick out that you love.
Oh, boy. Who paying?
Somebody will. Thanks to Mo Dakhil for joining us today. Thanks to producer Dakota and the entire team that worked so hard behind the scenes on this show. And by that, I mean producer Dakota. I'll be back on Wednesday with Amin El Hassan. Until then, everybody be safe.